For the sermon today, I'd like to entitle the sermon, Let Freedom Ring. And I say that because Martin Luther King, about a week or so ago, we commemorated his statements and some of the things that he did, and he made the statement that you're all familiar with, and he made this very strong thing, free at last. Well, he was a little premature in that statement, because we aren't free, unfortunately, in this world. Free is a relative thing, I guess. And he was referring, of course, to racial prejudice, which we certainly don't agree with. We don't agree with that kind of viewpoint, and we're not prejudiced. But on the other side of the coin, are we really free in this world right now, even in a free country? Well, we all want to have peace. Nobody wants to live in fear. Nobody wants to have all kinds of things surrounding them. We want peace. We want freedom. We would like to have, I am sure, and just think about this, because I got thinking about it from the point of view that we get used to this surrounding us. This is just the way life is, and so we've kind of accepted it, and we don't even realize that it is enslaving us, that it's bondage upon us. For example, we live in a world that doesn't have any problem lying. Now, that's not something that makes you feel unburdened or free. You can't trust people. Does he really mean that? Does she really mean that? Are they just saying that because they're trying to get something from me? So you're on guard. That's not freedom. Stealing. I mean, we all have to be on guard for that. Make sure your door is bolted at night. If you're living in a really bad area, you're going to have some kind of cameras and warning systems. I mean, they've got all this electronic things. You can sit there on your laptop and watch the burglars break into your house, you know, live right on TV if you want. And some people have done that. They're on vacation, and they check their house, and they see it being broken into because the camera is revealing it. This is not a free situation, and certainly we're under bondage when that happens. Or murder. Life is cheap in this world today. Think about all the murders that are constantly being reported every single night on the TV. Every night somebody's getting shot, or day, I should say, and they're reporting on it. It was just like my brother-in-law, who had been a state policeman in Michigan. And when we were out in New Jersey and they came out to visit, we were right across from Manhattan, New York City. And, of course, the news came on, and it all comes out of New York. And every night, you know, there are at least four killings. And he's sitting there watching this. I said, well, it's, you know, four people just, you know, they report on this one and then this one, and a dead body's found here and whatever. I said, well, that's par for the course. He's just shaking his head. He's laughing. This is ridiculous. Now, that was 20 years ago. Look at what's going on in Chicago and all the people kind of getting, or not kind of, but, you know, just they just get shot randomly because of the gangs, and over in Detroit and up in Milwaukee right now, it's the same way. Every night somebody got shot. Someone got killed. Some little kid happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And there are the good families that are trying to work and support their family and trying to protect their children. And these murderers, literally, running around, shooting guns off. And I've told people, I was telling some people here this, I guess it was last Sabbath, about when I was a pastor down in Chicago on the north side. And the same thing was, we went through in New Jersey. people loved to come to church. They would come to church early, and we had to shoo them out of the hall. And in the summertime, they were out on the steps, and they were still visiting out in the parking lot at 7 o'clock at night. Well, why? Because it was a safe place. There weren't any guns going off. And like one young teenage girl told me, oh, yeah, I was just able to move in with my aunt to another part of the city. And there's not as much gunfire over there. You just have to understand. It was the same in Chicago. We went to pick up this one young man who wanted to be, was interested in being baptized. And he had been shot 3 times by a gang. You know, you just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. Got shot 3 times. Recovered. And at that time, I had a dark blue Ford Taurus. And same color as the police like to have their cars. I didn't choose it that way. It's just the way it worked out. And I went down. We were going to go down and pick him up. And then kind of leave the area where he was living in because there was no place to really visit him and talk with him and then, you know, take him back. Well, when I grew up driving in Chicago, going to church there, you learn to drive through these narrow residential streets. Everybody's parked on both sides of the road, and you have to learn to hold your breath and pass cars, you know. You don't have too much space. Well, they converted a lot of those streets into one way. So this other fellow that was with me, we both had coat and tie on. We're in this dark blue car. As I was coming in, here comes a plainclothes police car kind of racing the opposite way on the one-way street. I'm going the correct way on the one-way street. He's going the other way. And he looks at me. He was a white policeman, but, you know, here we are in the black ghetto area, and there aren't very many white faces there. And he does this double take, like, who are these guys? And then, of course, he was looking for somebody, obviously. And so he passed us. We picked this young man up. He got in the back seat. I go to the end of the block and make, you know, the turn to go back to the main highway, North Avenue, I guess it was, and go the correct way on the other one-way street to get back to the main road to get out of the area. And here he comes again. He's going the opposite direction past me again, and he really does a double take. Now he sees this black guy in the back seat, and these two guys drive. Well, that's the kind of situation that people live in every day. Now, I don't know what was going on, but obviously they were after somebody. And but the people in Chicago express the same thing. The young people talk about how the guns are going off all the time, and that was back in the late 90s or in the mid 90s. I mean, so this is not freedom. This is bondage to live in that kind of thing. You always have to keep your head down. You never know when you're going to get shot at by some crazy people. People who are hypocrites. Say one thing, smile at you, stab you in the back at the same time. Of course, government control, more and more of that transpiring, that certainly is taking our freedom away. People aren't loyal. They don't have concern for other people. They just take care of themselves. They have to do what they have to do to take care of themselves. They use intimidation. That's not freedom either. They intimidate other people to get what they want. Or if you work hard and you really do a good job, now it's okay for you to do okay. You can do good. Just don't do too good. Because if you do too good, now you're threatening my position, and you might want to try to take my job, so now I have to put the thumb on you. Or I have to do something to stop you. And, of course, salespeople run into this a lot. If they're hard workers, they get out there, they develop the sales territory, and when they start making too much money on commission, then the management says, oh, this guy's making too much money. Let's cut his territory. That's as common as breathing. You can do good, but don't do too good. People get in, they are intimidated, or they're trying to hold others back because if they were good business people, they would realize that that's good for the company and it makes them as a manager look good, and they will get promoted as a result of having picked good people and motivated them. But they people don't look at it that way, or not every. Once in a while, you'd find somebody who is a good manager. But generally, they get all fearful and envious. And they want to blame other people. How many people, this is why I gave that sermon about get smart. Because everybody wants to blame everybody else for anything that happens. They don't want to take the responsibility. Oh, it's not my fault. And we see this in the government. Everybody else is at fault, or I didn't know anything about that. The common phrase that's being repeated. This is not freedom. What do we need to be free from? Well, we'll find out here in a little bit. Notice what Paul said. He had problems too in this society. He was plagued. Go to 2 Timothy, the 4th chapter and verse 14. Poor Paul. He got a little ticked off, so to speak. But he controlled himself. But I just get a real kick out of the way he expressed himself here. 2 Timothy 4 and verse 14. Alexander the coppersmith did me much evil. And his attitude towards Alexander the coppersmith? May the Lord reward him according to his works. Think about that. May the Lord reward him according to his works. And you remember the other example where the demon-possessed woman kept yelling and shouting about how, you know, for following him around. And finally, he had to turn around and rebuke him. Maybe it was Peter that did that, but I think it was Paul. I'd have to go look that up again. Notice here in 1 Thessalonians, go over back a few pages, 1 Thessalonians 2 and verse 18. This happens to us in the church, but it certainly, I've experienced this quite a few times in the ministry. Satan is there to do this. 1 Thessalonians, the first chapter and verse 18, wherefore we would have come to you, we're trying to come and visit you and see you, even I, Paul, once and again. But Satan hindered us. He didn't stop him, but he threw roadblocks in front of him. And I remember one time many years ago traveling through Iowa, when we lived in Omaha, Nebraska, and we had all of Iowa to travel and to visit these people that were scattered all over the place. And I remember on these little two-lane roads and whatever, and we came to a detour, and we were trying to get to see this new person. And the detour took us 80 miles out of our way, which was a little crazy, to say the least. And I mean, it was just nuts. And I wasn't familiar enough with the back roads there to circumvent their detour signs. So following it, it was 80 miles out of the way. Now, we still got to see the person, and it was important for me or for us to see him. But Satan knew it, and he did everything he could to stop us. Now, I could give you many examples like that. So this is nothing new. But again, that's not being free, is it? You have this opposition that we live with, and we kind of accept it. We just realize, you know, it's the way life is. You got to be on guard. You got to watch out for crooks. You have to watch out for murderers. You have to watch out for liars. You have to be alert. That's not freedom. And all of those things that we live in are part, there's a cause for all that. Notice what, and then another example here. Go to 2 Corinthians, the 11th chapter. The Apostle Paul certainly went through lots of things. He was quite a person. He talks about here in 2 Corinthians 11 and verse 13, in verse 13 specifically, this is what all of us have to be on guard for. For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into the apostles of Christ. The world is filled with them. What was one of the first things Christ warned his disciples about? False teachers. Beware. Don't be deceived. This is one of Satan's very, very effective and very strong attacks on humanity. He's trying to get everybody convinced that they're going in the right direction when he's got them going in the wrong direction. They're false apostles. They're deceitful workers. And Satan, of course, tries to attack the church and God's people in the same way. If he can get you with a bitter attitude, or he can get you when you're weak and you're not as close to God, all these different circumstances tempt you with this. What did Satan do to Jesus Christ? Well, just fall down and worship me, and I'll give you all these things out here. Such a deal I have for you. He's always there to try to make people think that his way is better than what they have. No marvel, in verse 14, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. We have to be on guard. Again, that's not relaxation and freedom and peace. That's bondage. You're always under that gun. Therefore, it is no great thing, verse 15, if his ministers also be transformed as ministers of righteousness, whose end shall be according to their works. And then he goes on and talks in verse 24 of all the suffering he went through. And this doesn't, this is not a description of freedom. Verse 24, of the Jews, five times I received 40 stripes, saved one. So he was beaten five times by the Jews with whip. Three times I was beaten with a rod. Oh, that's nice. Once I was stoned, and he doesn't go on to say, and left for dead. And maybe he really was dead and God resurrected him. It doesn't say. But when you get stoned, chances of dying are pretty high. They don't walk away until they think you are dead. Once I was stoned, three times I suffered shipwreck. A night and day have I been in the deep. Three times, not once, but three times floating out in the ocean. Not nice. In journeyings often, in perils of waters, big storms, in perils of robbers, just like we face, we're surrounded with all that. You have to keep your, you know, if you're living in any kind of big city or high crime area, you better keep your eyes open. You better know who's ahead of you, who's on either side, and who's behind you. Now, when you live out in New York City or any place like that or Chicago, you learn that pretty quick. You're just always on guard. Your head's on a swivel. You're watching. You know what's going on. That's not freedom. That's bondage. He goes on, and also in perils by the heathen. In perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren. He couldn't even get away when he was in the church. People who claim to be brethren, and believe me, I've observed this through the years, that false brethren are planted there or put there by Satan, and they can cause a lot of trouble. Now, it all ends up, works out in the end, but it is a pain in the neck in the process, and it can cause a lot of difficulty in that process. Verse 27, in weariness and in painfulness and in watchings often, in hunger and thirst, fastings, cold and nakedness. Besides those those things that are without, that which comes upon me daily, the care of all the churches. So he's trying to take care of the churches, and look what he's being hindered by. All these things he has to put up with. That's not a picture of freedom. And guess what? We're in the same situation. We may not be getting shipwrecked, and we may not be getting mugged every day, but we did do a survey one time in Manhattan, and we had 400 people there in the church in Manhattan. How many people have ever been mugged? 80% of the people raised their hand. That's life for them. Not good. Not good. Gunshots, bullets flying, people getting killed. That's not a picture of freedom. But in the future, of course, the world's going to be free, and we're going to be free. Look in John 16. Do you think Christ understood this? And we need to understand what, you know, we need to look around and realize, okay, this is not the way it's going to be. And we shouldn't just accept the fact that, well, this is the way it is. Because this is not the way it is. This is not the way it's supposed to be. And it's not going to be that way in the future. And we need to realize that we're under bondage in this world because of, we'll get to it. John 16, verse 33. These things have I spoken to you. He's talking to his disciples shortly before he's to be crucified. He knew what they were going to go through. He told Paul ahead of time what he was going to suffer. These things I have spoken to you, that in me you may have peace. In me you may have peace. Now, this is where we have to trust God, and we have to place our safety and our protection in God's hands, just as we heard in the opening prayer. We request God to protect us and to set his angels about us. We need to do that every day because we need it. Believe me, we need it. These things have I spoken to you, Christ said, that you might, that in me you might have peace. Because in the world you will have, and I'm putting in modern language, you're going to be in tribulation. You're going to be in bondage. You're going to be in slavery to the way of this world. Now, God, I can tell you this from my own experience, having learned it the hard way, not having realized how much I needed God's protection. When you're young and you're enthusiastic and you take off and you think, you know, man, I can do anything. And so you proceed in life trying to do all these things on your own. And pretty soon you start banging into a brick wall and you begin to realize, wait a minute, if I'm going to obey God and I'm going to follow God's way of life, it doesn't match up with what this world is going or the direction it's going. And I can't use the tools, so to speak, that the world uses to get ahead. I can't cheat. I can't lie. I can't do all those things because that's not right. So now what do I do? Well, now you begin to learn to trust God, and you begin to realize how much you need God's help. And without God's help, in your everyday life, in business, or whatever you're doing, We've got to have that closeness to God. Because he said, in the world you will have tribulation. Now, who's going to protect you from the tribulation? Well, God will. And he promises, he said, in me, he just said that, in me you're going to have peace. But in the world you're going to be surrounded by all these things we just reviewed. All these pains in the neck. All these things that Satan throws out there to make humanity uncomfortable and mess up everything. He said, but be of good cheer because I've overcome the world. I have overcome the world. Now, we won't see the full results of that, of course, until Christ comes back. But we can personally have that protection and that peace and that help to help give us the help that we need, because we're going to have tribulation in the world. And certainly Paul had it. And he was obviously a great target of Satan, the devil. And believe me, I won't give you all kinds of examples. But when you're out there, and I could just tell you this. When I was serving in the ministry full time in the past, I just thought it was, these difficulties would come up. I thought it was normal. I didn't know any better. And then when I was found myself out of that on a full-time basis in the business world, all of a sudden after about 6 months, I realized, I'm not having those troubles. And then when I've gotten back involved again, various things transpire. Because Satan does not want us to serve God's people. He just does not want it. And he will work, and he doesn't want you to serve God either. So he'll do everything he can to stop you or to throw roadblocks in front of you. And that's why we need God's protection. What did Christ say to Peter? He said, look, Satan has asked to sift you like wheat, just to take you and do what he wants with you. But Christ said, I have prayed for you. In me, he said, you can have peace. But in the world, you will have tribulation. That's the way it is. This is not a free world. It's not a nice place. But God can get us through it, just like he's going to take the church and protect the church through tribulation. Even though we will suffer some persecution in the process before that happens. All right, chapter 8, John, go back a few pages. What will give us freedom? Well, Christ told us right here. John 8, verse 32. He's again talking to his disciples, and he says, to them, then to the Jews. Well, let's read verse 31. Then Jesus said to those Jews which believed on him, who accepted him, who realized that he was telling the truth, if you continue in my word, then are you my disciples indeed, my learners, my followers. And verse 32, and you shall know the truth. Now, in reviewing the booklet on the Sabbath and talking through the internet to this one person, and they were this one person, like I said, we've been communicating in numerous emails trying to show the person the explanation in the Bible for the technical questions they were asking. You can see that they just, no matter what we explain and how clearly it's laid out, they don't see it. They cannot, it's just, the one comment the person made is, well, I kind of get your point. And that was the most positive response they had. But here it was laid out as clear as anything. Explained clearly, proven point by point in the scripture. It's so clear. It's so simple. You read that booklet, Sunset to Sunset. It explains it all so clearly. Brings up all of these scriptures that, you know, and we'll have a little talk about it later on, which I'm kind of anxious to do and find out what you all have learned and everything. But I just got struck with that this morning, you know. It's clear to me, and it's clear to you. Why isn't it clear to the rest of the people? Because they're blinded. They cannot see what God has given us the ability to see. You read it, and it's so simple. But they can't see it, even though you explain it to them, even though it's all proven there. Yeah, but I don't know about that. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. God's truth makes you free. Free from what? Well, let's keep going. Galatians 4. What are we free from? Even though we live in this world, in this society, and we're surrounded by bondage and enslaved by all the things going on. Here, Galatians 4 and, let's see, verse 26. Galatians 4, 26. But Jerusalem, which is above, is free, which is the mother of us all. For it is I don't want to go through all these scriptures, but he's comparing the fact that God's way is something that is not only does he offer us freedom, but it is given to us freely. And Jerusalem, which is above, is free, which of course we can't earn, and it's a gift from God, and it's the accepting of Christ's sacrifice for our sins that allows us to receive that gift, which is the mother of us all. For it is written, rejoice, you barren that bears not, and so on. He talks about the free woman and the bond woman. And we go down here to verse 30. Nevertheless, what says the scripture? Cast out the bondwoman and her son, for the son of the bondwoman shall not be heir with the son of the free woman. So then, brethren, verse 31, we are not children of the bondwoman, but of the free. So he's trying to show us that God's way, Jerusalem above, of course, represents the kingdom of God, and that's going to be coming to this earth with the Father ultimately when the plan of God is worked out. New heaven and the new earth, new Jerusalem. And we are going to be given not only that blessing freely, but we will be given freedom. Freedom from this environment. God wants, you know, God is not just fair, as I've said before. He is more than fair. And he's letting man get a super, super dose of Satan's way of life. Now, if he is sticking, or I shouldn't say it that way, but if it turns out, I'll just say it this way. If it turns out that Satan has been given 7,000, or, you know, that there's a 7,000-year plan, and that Satan's been given 6,000 years for his program, and Christ has given 1,000 years to get it squared away, that's a pretty fair deal, isn't it? Hey, I'm giving you 6 times more time to develop your program as opposed to what I'm going to do. That's more than fair. Irrefutably fair. But it will get straightened out in 1,000 years. 1,100 years, actually. And, of course, people need to get a good dose of Satan. They need to get a good dose of this environment, which we have to put up with and which we're kind of used to because We don't have anything else to compare. We don't know what it would be like. We only get a little taste of it for a week. For 8 days at the Feast of Tabernacles, we get a taste of true freedom. Peace and freedom. And that's why we enjoy it so much. But that's just 1 week out of 52. That's not very long. It's just a little teaser. But that's the way it's always going to be. Every day, all the time. People working together, people cooperating, people of one mind. Safety, peace. That's God's way. That's the Jerusalem which we're looking forward to coming down from the Father eventually. So we are not, we're looking forward to that freedom. We are free from what we'll read here in a little bit. Okay, let's go to Romans, the 6th chapter, verse 18. And the answer is so simple, and you probably already figured it out. Romans 6 and verse 18. Well, even verse 17. But God be thanked that you were the servants of sin in the past, but you have obeyed from the heart that form of doctrine which was delivered to you. So when God called them, they responded, they repented, and they began to follow what God said. Being then, verse 18, made free from what? What are we looking forward to being free from? Pretty simple. Sin. You became the servants of righteousness. Now, we are free from the penalty of the sin because we've been forgiven, number one, and number two, because we stopped doing it. We stopped continuing to break God's law. Does that mean that we are perfect and we never break God's law? No. But we repent when we realize that we have. And God forgives us at that point. So we are free from sin. That's what the world is going to be, because all the things that we just read and described are all a result of that simple thing called sin. Those are the penalties that come with it. You like it? Are you enjoying it, folks? No. You know, you can say that to the world. How's that working for you, as they say? You like living in the midst of murder and gunfire and lying and cheating and stealing, two-facedness, a hypocrisy? Do you like that? How's that going for you? 6,000 years of it. Wars, murders, people losing family members, disease, all the awful things that we see. I mean, just like this young man, you know, the singer. I'm not going to mention his name. You know who he is. He just got arrested. Now, this just makes me sad. He's 19 years old. He's just being stupid. There's no reason to be that way. If he could just live normally, you know. But he's going nuts. And he's going to find out you can't do that. You're going to pay the penalty for breaking the rules. Now, that's man; those are man's rules. But, of course, he'll pay the penalty in his personal life for breaking the moral laws. God has removed us from having to have the penalty of sin. Sin is the problem, or the result of, it's the result of sin, the penalty of sin, what comes with it. You see, brethren, God isn't sitting up there, and this is important for all of us to understand, and especially some of our young people, because sometimes the teenagers or younger people think that God's up there now, and we parents, you know, we teach them. Now, don't, you can't break God's law. You've got to do this, you've got to do that. If you don't, then you suffer the penalty. Right? So they, you kind of get in your mind, well, God's sitting there, and he's watching me, and if I make a mistake, He's going to squash me like a bug. He didn't have to do anything, brethren. When we break God's laws, they break us. It's automatic. It's like gravity. He doesn't have to do something to you. You just did it to yourself. If you start taking drugs and doing all this kind of thing, did God make that penalty come upon you when your brain doesn't work right? Or you get caught and thrown in jail? God didn't do that to you. You did that. It's a simple result of your breaking the laws. So God isn't waiting there to kind of get you. He's trying to help us avoid those kind of things. That's why he's got this Bible. That's why he wrote Proverbs for young people, to help them avoid the automatic penalties that just come as a result. When you do this, that's what's going to happen. God isn't, you know, singling you out. It's like looking in the mirror and going, now what bad thing do I want to happen to myself? Let's, you know, even from a, I even thought about this when I was coming to understand things at about 18 in a personal way. I thought, now if I'm just selfish and if I'm greedy, I'm going to want to obey God's laws, because God's going to give me the best. And if I don't obey him, then I have to suffer all these things. That was pretty clear to me. So if I just want to be greedy and selfish and get the best for myself, I'm going to work hard to at least try to obey these rules, because I know I'm going to come out the best in the end. So you can't lose by doing what God says. If you go the other way, that's your choice. Satan will make it look good, but you will always lose in the end. You'll suffer, you'll have whatever, because it's just the way it is. No, you jump out the, whether you jump or whether you fall from the 10th story building, while you're flying through the air, hey, no problem, nice ride, everything's okay. You hit the ground. So it's just the way it is. It's kind of funny in a way, because it's so simple. But we want to be freed from the penalty of sin, which surrounds us every day, and we just kind of accept it as a way of life. But it's not going to be that way in the future. I'm not going to read this, but in Isaiah 30 and verse 21, it talks about the kingdom of God. And when someone wants to go in the wrong direction, he'll hear this voice behind him. Because the teachers, it says, are not going to be hidden. You will see your teachers. Right now, if someone tries to teach the truth and tries to show people the right way, does he become the rock star? Does he become the popular individual? Or is he kind of shoved off to the side as a nutcase or whatever? Well, you know what'll happen. But in the future, the teachers will be around, they'll be available, and when the person decides or starts thinking or going in the wrong direction, you'll hear a little voice behind him. He'll get tapped on the shoulder and go, don't think that's a good idea. You know, this is the way, walk over here. And they'll be taught and instructed and guided. And they will be, these people will be so much better off, because they will avoid all these problems. And then finally in Revelation 21, this is the ultimate description of true freedom. And this is what we have to look forward to. This is what God the Father, when Christ has fulfilled the plan of God, and he's taught everybody, and everybody has had a fair chance, this is the environment that the people who have accepted God's way of life will be living in, will be enjoying. verse 21, or chapter 21 of Revelation, in verse 1, he said, I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, thankfully, gone. And there was no more sea. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, God's kingdom, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people. Now God is letting man do what he wants, and Satan, of course, is the god of this world today. Now God's available if people seek him, or if he calls them and they're willing to respond, but he's not dwelling with them all the time like he will be in the future. Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, verse 3, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them and be their God. And God shall wipe away all the tears from their eyes. And if you have been around various circumstances and situations, people shed a lot of tears over difficulties and trials and loss of family members. It's not nice. It says the last enemy to be destroyed is going to be death. That's not a friend. It's an enemy. God's going to wipe away all those tears and the sadness and the anguish that goes with that. And there shall be no more death, neither sorrow nor crying. You look and watch on TV. It didn't take very much. Look at the people who... whose children get kidnapped by some maniac, idiot, and tortured and killed. That's a lot of sorrow and a lot of crying. Nor crying, neither shall there be any more pain. People aren't going to be suffering from all kinds of terrible diseases, things that are just terrible to go through. For the former things, thank God, are going to be passed away. The way of this world are going to be gone, and true freedom is going to be there. This is a description of the bondage people are under. Tears, suffering, death, sorrow, crying, pain. That's not freedom. Those are all a result of sin. And he that sat upon the throne, behold, I will make all things new. And he said unto me, Write, for these words are true and faithful. And he said to me, It is done. The job's finished. I'm the beginning and I'm the end. I will give unto him that is thirsty of the fountain of the water of life freely. You have to, and we all have to, desire that, see the benefit of it. He that overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. But the fearful and unbelieving and abominable and murderers and whoremongers, sorcerers and adulterers and liars shall have their place in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. That, all that sin or fruits of sin will be gone. And then we'll have true freedom, which we don't have today. Now we can have peace, and we can be free personally of the results of disobedience or sin. But we're still living in the surroundings of tribulation, as Christ said. In the world, you will have tribulation. And thankfully, we are enjoying a reasonable amount of peace and protection in this society right now, more than we may realize. And we may look back and say, oh, wow, we really had it good back there. Look what we're going through now. Just appreciate what we have right now, because God is certainly blessing us, and I'm certainly praying that God will call more people into his church and that he will use all of us, all of you, to help nurture anyone who is interested in God's way of life and in his truth. But in the meantime, we have to recognize that we are living in bondage in this world, and it's all due to disobeying God's way of life.